Good afternoon and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We appreciate you all coming down here this afternoon or over here. I'm Justice Gardner, and to my right is Justice Walker, and to my left is Justice McCoy. And we're your panel for this afternoon. We have two cases on the docket for oral argument, and this case is first. So I will ask the clerk to go ahead and introduce the lawyers and call the case.
The court will now call MDMC1 LLC versus the town of Double Oak, Charlie Wright and Charlotte Allen. May it please the court, Mr. David, Ms. Gala will argue for the appellant. Mr. David M. Bergman will argue for the appellate.
Thank you. Mr. Ms. Gallo, would you ready to proceed?
Yes.
Okay.
May it please the court. Based on the briefing that is currently before the court, there's really no question that the trial court summary judgment must fall. The only real question for the court is what happens next. The answer to that is that the case must be remanded back to the trial court. The town disagrees with that, and they offer only one basis to support that disagreement, and that is the dominant jurisdiction doctrine. There are at least three reasons why the dominant jurisdiction doctrine does not apply in this case. The central case, the seminal case on dominant jurisdiction is the Texas Supreme Court decision of Wyatt versus Shaw Plumbing. Both parties cited in their briefing. The site on that is 760 Southwest 2nd, 245, Texas, 1988. The first principle that we get from Shaw is that the dominant jurisdiction doctrine is really a doctrine to protect the plaintiff's choice of forum. It is not a defensive doctrine for the defendant to assert. And we know that because on page 248 of that opinion, it says, as long as the forum is a proper one, it is the plaintiff's privilege to choose the forum. Defendants are simply not at liberty to decline to do battle in the forum chosen by the plaintiff. We know that. Again, it goes back to the plaintiff's benefit because the analogy that the court draws is to Texas Rule Civil Procedure 97A, which is the mandatory counterclaims. And those say that in a suit, you have to bring all of the claims that you have against the plaintiff or you waive them. So the first ground is that, one, the doctrine is not applicable to the town. The second basis is that a plea and abatement is required as the vehicle to assert dominant jurisdiction.
I was going to say it's the doctrine of dominant jurisdiction is not really a doctrine of jurisdiction, is it?
No, Your Honor. It's not like subject matter jurisdiction, which can be asserted at any time. In fact, it doesn't preclude the second court from asserting jurisdiction. It's really one of comity. It's one that says we will defer to the first court in which the action was filed unless there is some reason not to. And it's for that reason that that it can be waived. And the Texas Supreme Court in Wyatt and this court have both recognized that if you do not assert it in a timely manner through a plea and abatement, you've lost your right to assert dominant jurisdiction.
Isn't the time to do that in the trial court?
It is, Your Honor, because in this case, the doctrine is not being asserted until after the defendant invoked the court's jurisdiction and, in fact, expressly asked the court to use its jurisdiction to rule against the plaintiff. And so it's only after the final judgment that they received has the potential to become adverse to them that they no longer want that court to exercise jurisdiction. It's for that reason that you have to assert it before the final judgment's entered. And in fact, in this case, in the record, it shows that dominant jurisdiction was nowhere on the mind of the town, because the arguments that they gave in favor for granting summary judgment was that if this court reversed the McDaniel case, which it did, then the second court, the court of the county court, would be faced with ongoing litigation at the same time as the trial court in the McDaniel case. So the very argument that they asserted in favor of granting jurisdiction was because there would be two simultaneous proceedings. So they didn't even mention the doctrine of dominant jurisdiction back in the trial court. The third basis for why dominant jurisdiction does not apply is that a party is not entitled to use the doctrine offensively. And in Wyatt, a case with analogous facts, the defendant in that case, who had been sued in case number one, asked for the case to be severed and transferred to a separate court. When that motion was granted, the defendant then argued that dominant jurisdiction precluded the second court from acting. In this case, the town asserted that Mr. McDaniel lacked standing and could not pursue the claims for MEMC in McDaniel in the district court. And so it was for that reason that MEMC filed the second lawsuit. Then when you get to the second lawsuit, the town asserts, well, the first lawsuit is res judicata, and so now you're out. The county court recognized the inherent unfairness of that position in the proceedings. During the summary judgment, they said, well, you've kind of put them in a box, because in the first case, you said your claims don't belong here. And in the second case, you've now said the first case precludes your causes of action as a matter of law. And the court was right to recognize that. The town has yet to offer a defensible position for how it is that they can assert that there's no standing in case number one, and then when case number two is filed in the name of the appropriate party asserting the appropriate claims, how it is possible that that could be barred by res judicata. And again, we go back to the issue and we look at res judicata, and we know that there has to be a final judgment, which in this case there never was. And for demonstrative purpose, I've provided the court with a brief summary of the res judicata and why it is that it does not apply. So those are the three reasons that dominant jurisdiction cannot and does not apply, and why it does not and will not support an abatement or a dismissal. That leaves the final issue with the motion to abate and our response, in which we've asked for sanctions in response to having to file all of the briefing and the pleadings in this case, because there's nothing in the motion to abate and there's nothing in their briefing on the merits that establishes any legal or factual basis for why this court should not reverse and remand it back to the county court for trial court proceedings.
The only ground for summary judgment being res judicata,
yes,
based on the judgment that was reversed by us.
Yes, Your Honor. Unless the court has any further questions, I think that concludes my argument.
Judge? I guess not. Thank you very much for your argument. And so now we'll hear from Mr. Berman. Sure.
May it please the court, David Berman here on behalf of the town of Double Oak and all the defendants. I'm a bit concerned because you didn't ask them any questions. I think you're saving them all up for me. Let me first begin by saying this. What they did not tell you, what they did not say, was the fact that the second lawsuit, the county court suit, alleges the same things that they alleged in the first lawsuit in district court. The pleas for the monument sign were verbatim, word for word, out of their Fifth Amendment petition in the district court action. The allegations that dealt with the building permit fees for Phase 2 were, in fact, alleged and brought in the district court action. They were not adjudicated or litigated because they non-suited them literally minutes before trial. So, but they were brought. And so, to the extent that they allege legal arguments with regard to res judicata and dominant jurisdiction, which really, in essence, are two different species of the same thing, they never actually say what gives them the right to file two different lawsuits against the same party.
Wasn't it the town's position that they lacked that the corporation lacked standing?
That was one of our positions. Yes, that was one. You'll recall the oral argument that we had in the Court of Appeals in this court dealing with the District Court Appeal. My position was either number one, Mike McDaniel lacked standing, or if he did not, then the judge's order of dismissal for lack of jurisdiction was properly based on governmental immunity. And the order didn't specify that. Now, what we know now, based on this court's unpublished written opinion, is that McDaniel all along had standing. So, and we never argued that MEMAC, the company, lacked standing. But what we do argue is that there was absolutely no reason why that company could not have been joined as a party plaintiff in the district court lawsuit. There was no reason why they had to non-suit, why they voluntarily non-suited their claims for building permits for Phase 2. And there is no reason why they have some authority or some right to bring the monument sign claim two different times in two different lawsuits. All right. Standard for appellate review, this is a motion for summary judgment, a traditional one. The issue is a de novo review. It involves purely a question of law. They lose a trial. A few months later, they then file this lawsuit in county court with cut-and-pasted allegations in two different pleadings. We move for summary judgment. The county court dismissed it on November 4 of 2011. The order of dismissal doesn't describe or state the reason or rationale behind the dismissal. It just simply says summary judgment is granted, no question of fact, issue of law, judgment is a matter of law in favor of the defendant.
But wasn't your only ground?
That's all we alleged. That's all we alleged.
And so it has to be on res judicata.
Yes, it does. But the law is very clear that this court can uphold a judgment based on any theory supported by the record. If you disagreed with the trial judge's determination, so long as he...
You're saying that we can uphold a summary judgment on a ground never pleaded by a defendant and never ruled on by a trial court.
What I'm saying is that the law in this state is that if a judge enters an order and dismisses a case, in the absence of findings of fact and conclusions of law, if the judgment can be supported on any theory found in the record, the appellate court has an obligation to support and uphold that judgment.
What does found in the record mean if it's unpled?
Well, in this particular case, there is...
How would they defend against the motion for summary judgment found in the record that's unpled?
Well, it's not that they have to defend against it. It's that the record is very clear that in the trial court, the trial judge was given notice of the pendency of another lawsuit, as well as an order of dismissal. At the time, res judicata was correct. I mean, res judicata doesn't require standing as an element, and if you compare
the order of dismissal was a summary judgment, correct?
Yes. Yes, okay. And we pled res judicata as the basis.
Okay.
And at the time, that order was correct. We had a final judgment. We had a final adjudication. And the three elements of res judicata were met. Three elements are required. Number one, the second suit must be brought by the same parties or those in privity with them. Successors in interest are in privity. And that rule of privity is not the same as standing. If a claim could have been brought by someone in the first case or if they're successors in interest, then the first element of res judicata would be met. Number two, the claims must be the same.
Even if res judicata was proper at the time, once the opinion from our court reversing the judgment was handed, the district court judgment was handed down, then you concede that res judicata no longer applies.
And that's what we've said.
Okay.
That's exactly what our brief says.
Okay, now, so then you agree with appellant that the only real issue is whether or not dominant jurisdiction applies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that. Thank you. That saves me a whole bunch of time. The law in this state is now and has always been that one party cannot maintain two different lawsuits. They allege and state to you that Wyatt versus Shaw holds that a plea in abatement and the dominant jurisdiction issue can only be raised by a plaintiff because the doctrine exists for the benefit of the plaintiff. There is not a single case in this state that says that. I don't think that they're making it up. I think that they're extrapolating too far, going well beyond what the cases say. Number two, if not asserted by a plea in abatement, and it must be waived. It must be asserted before the final judgment in the first case. There are cases that say that. The proper vehicle to allege a plea in abatement, the proper vehicle to allege dominant jurisdiction is through a plea in abatement. And there are cases that say that if it's not timely alleged, then it's waived. There are very few cases that explore exactly what that waiver means, but there are some that, in fact, do. In Howell versus Mazzi, 899 Southwest 3rd, Southwest 2nd, 690, in Austin Court of Appeals 1994 decision, the court says courts may examine the equities of the situation in deciding whether a plea is timely filed. And it cites a case called DeVelo-Seps versus City of Galveston, 668 Southwest 2nd, 790, Houston 14th District Court of Appeals 1984, where a plea and abatement was filed 2.5 years later. So, there is no way that I could have filed a plea in abatement alleging dominant jurisdiction at the time that the county court lawsuit was pending, because we didn't have an opinion from this court yet. At that time, I believed, and I still do, but I believed that sovereign immunity applied and that the case in district court was properly dismissed. I believed that this court was going to uphold that opinion. I was wrong, and it did not. And so dominant jurisdiction now has to apply. There is no way that I could have timely filed a plea in abatement in the county court action without knowing what this court would have done. And to sit there and wait for months and months with a lawsuit pending doesn't make sense. And so there is another case called Finland versus Peavy, 205 Southwest 3rd, 647, which your clerk has indicated that she'd make copies for you. In that case, a plea and abatement was never filed. The case was dismissed and upheld by the Waco Court of Appeals based on dominant jurisdiction. No plea and abatement had ever been filed. The court in that case reasoned that what happened in that case was a couple of plaintiffs had filed a whole bunch of different lawsuits and then ended up filing one in Waco. In McLennan County, the trial court on its own motion took the matter up and said, I want you to brief me on jurisdiction. Apparently the parties either didn't brief them or briefed them, but for whatever reason the court disagreed with it, and the trial court dismissed the case based on dominant jurisdiction. The Waco Court of Appeals determines that although it cites that a plea and abatement is the proper vehicle for abating and dismissing for dominant jurisdictional purposes, the court also says that a trial court has inherent authority. Even if it's not alleged, the constitutional and inherent authority of a court exists to do that. And so in this case, it just kind of makes sense. They said at the very beginning, this case must be remanded back to the trial court. Their briefs say this case should be remanded back to the trial court for further proceedings. But they never say what those further proceedings should be. We have a determination, and we have the opportunity for a firm determination on the monument sign issue. And so are they saying that they should go back to the county court at law and retry that same issue one more time? Are they saying that the building permit fees for phase two, the fees that were alleged in the district court case, the ones that they non-suited and proceeded forward with trial on without that as part of their pleadings, are they saying that now they should have the opportunity to retry that issue again? Are they saying that MEMAC, the corporate plaintiff in this case, in the county court case, was never joined in the district court case, and that should be ignored by this court? The purpose for res judicata, the underlying theory behind the dominant jurisdiction doctrine, is to prevent parties from doing exactly what they've done to us. They lose in district court, and then they turn around and sue again. And this time they use the company to file the lawsuit. They allege essentially identical pleadings, and they vex the town more than once. So, to adopt their position would essentially mean that any party, like the plaintiffs in this case, could sue and lose and sue and lose and do it repeatedly until eventually they found a judge that was sympathetic. That's not what the law in the state is now, and the law in the state has never said that any party could ever do that. They get one shot at it. I had a trial judge once lecture me for some bizarre reason and said, in these courts, in these trial courts, is done the greatest justice in the world and the greatest injustice in the world. These courts are not here for practice. They're not for education or for training. All of our education is lawyers. All of our training comes to bear when we go to court. If you make a mistake, that's usually just tough luck. If they failed to allege and join in MEMAC in the district court action, if they decided for whatever reason at the last minute to withdraw and non-suit their claims for the second phase of the building permit fees, that was their conscious choice. That choice should not be burdened, and the town should not suffer because of that choice. So, that wasn't so bad. Any questions? All right, thank you.
No questions, thank you. Is there any rebuttal?
Briefly.
Okay.
The issue before the court is not what could or might happen if the case is remanded. It is, what does this case require? The town moved for summary judgment on a ground that it concedes can no longer support the judgment. The issue of dominant jurisdiction, if it is raised or if it can be raised, should be raised in the trial court to allow the parties to respond on the merits of those issues and allow the trial court to make the findings of fact that this court cannot make in order to determine the application of dominant jurisdiction or res judicata or any of the other defenses. And for this court to allow the town's speculation as to what might happen to serve as a basis for not allowing the trial court to do its job would, in our opinion, be unjust. And for those reasons, we believe that the court should reverse and remand the case back for whatever proceedings the town decides to initiate after that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you all for your very good briefs and your presentation here today. The case is submitted, and we will stand in recess.